Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, and we are taking you from overworked and stressed out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Today, we have a really special guest. He is a friend of mine, a business partner and friend to my husband. Welcome to the show, Emmanuel Kelly.
Thank you so much. I have a feeling, though, that by the time I'm finished talking, I might actually stress people out. But it's all good. It's all good. We're going to have some fun anyway. But thanks for having me on, Rebecca.
You're so welcome. They'll definitely be entertained and inspired, and that is the goal of the show. So I'm so excited to tell my audience about your incredible journey. I mean, I am just in awe of this story. You can fill in the gaps, but this is what I would love to just give you some background and so my audience knows who we're talking to.
Yes.
Emmanuel Kelly was found in Iraq as a baby, half dead in a box by two American soldiers. He spent the next 7 years at an orphanage in Baghdad where he met his brother Ahmed. The humanitarian Moira Kelly heard about the boys, met them, and fell in love with them. Moira brought the boys to Australia for life-changing surgeries. Over the next 14 years, Emmanuel had six surgeries, and he had to learn how to walk and feed himself. Emmanuel became a media sensation when his song Imagine that he performed during Australian X Factor went viral. So how did I do? You're on mute.
Oh, that wasn't bad. You know what? I had to put myself on mute because I was saying everything you were saying right that was doing better than I normally do. So there you go. No. It was really good. You did better than I would. So, I mean, you told my story better than I tell my story. So that's a fair effort. Thank you.
It's an incredible story. And I feel like you have such a big mission and purpose in life because for all intents and purposes, you shouldn't have been here. You know, you could have died as a baby left in a box in the middle of a battlefield. And you have a huge mission to accomplish in life. So let's start with that question. What is your why? Why do you think that fate, God, the universe kept you alive through that incredibly rough journey? What is your mission?
You know, I think my mission for me isn't necessarily, I mean, my mission is my purpose, right? But I think we all as human beings have purpose and mission in our lives. And there's kind of a human purpose and a human mission. And that's just to be good to one another and to spread as much love to one another. As corny as that sounds, it's the case, you know? But personally, my mission in life is, I think, what I'm doing now. For a long, long time, I thought it was to perform on stage and to entertain and to do all that. And I think that serves as part of that purpose and mission, but it isn't the purpose and mission, right? And I was very fortunate to find out that why at an early age. And that is what I'm doing now with my new company, which your husband is involved in. He's terrible as a worker, though. I mean, geez, you know. Oh, did I just say that live? Sorry, Ben. Meant to tell you that.
Sorry, Ben.
No. He's amazing. You know, it's what we're doing now. It's what myself and Chris Martin from Coldplay kind of co-incepted a few years back. And, you know, I was doing a concert in Mexico in 2019, and a young kid came up to me and he asked me a question, and that was what my purpose was. And this kid had a condition called progeria, which essentially means it's a condition where you rapidly age. So he was a 12-year-old who looked 70, 80, 90. And he asked me what my purpose is. And I thought language was just lost in translation, but no, it wasn't the case. He genuinely meant the question. And he asked me that. And for a long time, I had to keep thinking and thinking and thinking and sort of meditating on it and doing whatever needs to be done to kind of understand what that was. And for a while, I didn't know. But I took a step back and took a look at myself and took a look at the life that I was living and realized that the life I was living is in many ways not mine, right? It's a life that I don't think I was supposed to live, but something greater than myself and I don't know if it's fate or God or the universe. It's whatever people truly believe in. It could be anything. In my case, it's all of them. You know, it's God, it's the universe, it's whatever we decide to call it. But it is something that's greater and that said, you know, you're living something and you need to kind of live it and make, you know, live it to its full potential. And so I started a company after calling Chris and explaining this part to him. I started a company and we both realized it was what we're supposed to do. And that company's called Outlier. So that is my purpose, Outlier, to find the outliers of the world, to, you know, hopefully allow them and their futures not to necessarily need a Coldplay or a Chris Martin or anybody of that caliber in order for them to succeed and in order for them to be seen and heard and not just seen. And the outlier community and the outliers that I'm talking about are people with disabilities, are people who are differently abled. That's that community. And I like to call it outliers because we are, we're unique, we're different. And I really believe that this community is the key to, you know, the key to opening that door of true empathy and true love and true understanding and innovation, both socially and economically, you know, and environmentally in many ways, but also accessibility in the world, technologically, empathetically, and socially is the key with this audience. And we can create that by simply representing them and making sure they don't need a Chris Martin to do what I'm doing.
So am I allowed to share about the concert with Chris Martin, the private rehearsal that I attended?
You can, absolutely, if you'd
okay.
like. Yeah,
so I had to keep it secret.
I don't think there is any secrets around that one. I think Chris sold it when he said no phones. So I think you can absolutely share it.
Awesome. So I love your relationship with Chris Martin, and because of that beautiful relationship,
we met on Tinder. That's why we're so close.
I'm kidding. Tinder is actually the first sponsor of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant show. So
there it is.
Get $20 off your Tinder membership. No, just kidding. but because of your friendship with Chris, Ben and I and just a couple other people got to attend his private rehearsal in a random parking lot in LA where he recreated the stage of his concert. And that was just such a learning lesson for me as a coach that teaches how to manifest, because he saw a full stadium sold out when it was just an empty, dark parking lot. And I'm like, oh my God, I felt like the universe, God got a whiteboard out for me. And he's like, all right, Rebecca, if I need to break it down, if I actually need to have a rock star sing to an empty parking lot to show you how to manifest, I guess that's what I'm going to have to do. So he was being a rock star to an empty parking lot on a cold LA night. And it was one of the most inspirational things I've ever seen in my life, because he didn't phone it in. He was being a rock star, and that is how you create. It's who you're being. It's not what you're doing. It's who you're being. And when you say, imagine, and everybody like loved it so much that they retweeted it. Jay-Z, Chris Martin, Yoko Ono. I'm sure the list goes on and on of the rock stars and people that retweeted it. Who were you being? Like, did you walk onto that stage and have like a pep talk or a prayer or a talk or a look in the mirror that you're like, this is it. This is the moment. I'm going to change my life. Did you have a mantra that night? Like,
the truth is, it's a great question. The truth is, you know, I could sit here and tell you, it was this and the power of this, but the truth is, Rebecca, it was honestly just me being me. I felt like a Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, I was just moving so fast, and you know, Super Mario in, you know, this kind of journey. There was nothing to it. All I knew in the moment, though, was when I'm on that stage, it's gonna go on TV at some point, I hope. And as long as I don't muck up the song, it's gonna go on TV. The girl I like in school at the time, it was this girl named Jackie. She's gonna see this, and I'm set. Like, I'm gonna get my first kiss. I was like excited. My first kiss didn't end up coming from her. It ended up coming from somebody that actually was there that night at the performance. But still, it was, I was thinking, man, you know, finally this short little brown pimpled one-armed guy is going to get his first hookup. I was just excited about that. And that's what I was seeing, I'll be honest. But, you know, afterwards, when it actually did go live, and when Yoko Ono tweeted it, and when the 60 Minutes and all these people were there, and they kept asking that question, you know, what was it, you know, to impact the world and help people, you know, inspire and all this sort of stuff. It was so full on in the moment. It was as though somebody decided, whether it's God, universe, or whoever it was, but somebody decided to put this giant weight on my shoulders and say, your responsibility now. You have a responsibility and a duty. For a long time, I didn't accept it. For a long time, I put it to the side. For a long time, I threw it to the side. And because I just wanted to be just like any other pop artist, in the sense that I didn't want to be seen as somebody that's inspiring a bunch of people to, you know, to be better humans. I just wanted to be a person who was inspiring people to, young people to be musicians or to have confidence. That's all I wanted, not, you know, constant kind of elements added and added and added and added constantly over and over again. And that led me to a very dark place as a person. And, you know, I ended up coming out to the US. I ended up performing with amazing people, opened for Snoop Dogg, and, you know, just had these incredible things, worked with, the Quincy Jones camp and the Bruno Mars camp, Philip Lawrence out there, and, you know, all these people. But during this time as well, I ended up getting on drugs, and I ended up driving myself into a ditch. And it was because I was just surrounded with so much responsibility, whilst at the same time surrounded with enormous amounts of fake love, whilst at the same time surrounded with massive, massive amounts of the discrimination elements of, you know, record label execs, et cetera, telling me that I'll never make it because of the way I looked, you know? And so when you've got all that, it's as though, Why have you put this giant weight on my shoulders? It's not fair. And I kept thinking that to myself. I turned myself into a victim. And because I turned myself into a victim, I drove myself into a really dark place, into depression and anxiety, and, you know, and started doing drugs, everything from marijuana to cocaine to ecstasy to, you can imagine it, you know, and sometimes it got even harsher than that, to the heroines and things like that. It got really dark at one point. But then one day, and I ended up homeless. I made all this money and then I ended up homeless. And so, you know, this entire thing that I just wanted to do because I loved music ended up being the best thing ever, but also the worst thing ever, all at once. At the time, that's what I felt, the worst thing ever. But actually, every single experience, the drugs, the depression, every one of them, it actually ended up being the best thing ever in the end. I just didn't realize it because I was so consumed with victimizing myself. But one day I saw this quote and it said, "It's none of your business what anyone thinks of you."
Yeah.
But it wasn't finished. It just said that. And it was this guy named Wayne Dyer that said it. Or maybe he requoted it, I'm not sure, but I think it's his. And I just saw it on my feed one night on Instagram, just randomly out of nowhere. I could never find it again, which says something. Maybe somebody put it in front of me or something put it in front of me. But I never could find it again. But it just sunk into me. But I it didn't finish. And that's what kept going into my head. I kept saying, well, then who the bloody hell business is it then? It's none of my business. Whose business is it? Like, come on. And the next day I looked at myself in the mirror and I didn't like the person I saw. And this was in 2017-ish. I didn't like the person I saw. Start of 2017. I didn't like the person I saw. Didn't at all. And I punched the mirror as hard as I could. And the next day a new mirror was bought. And my mate, this guy, Josh, I was staying on his couch and he got the new mirror and he says, "Listen, you know, do me a favor, don't break this one." I said, "I'll try my best." And he goes, "You're lucky I'm a Jew and I've got money." And I'm like, "Okay, thanks, mate. That's good. Not sure what that means." He goes, "Well, you know, I got money. So you're lucky that I can replace it without a problem. But, you know, I can't replace it again, Emmanuel." So I said, "All right, I'll try my best not to break it." And he puts it up. And when I saw the new person that was in that mirror, I realized that line and what it really meant. And that was, it's none of my business what anyone thinks of me. It's only my business what I think of myself. So do I love me? Do I love the person that I am? Do I love the person I can be? Do I embrace who I am? Do I embrace my differences? And I said yes, even though I didn't believe it. And every day I asked myself the same question and I said yes. And every day for about 3 months. And on the third month, I started to believe it. And after that third month, I started to put up goals of what I wanted to achieve that by the end of that year. And one of those goals was I was going to perform with, you know, one of the top five of these artists. And Coldplay was at the bottom of the list because I had no way of getting to them. But everyone else, I had a go at getting to them. But Coldplay was on that list. And by the end of 2017, I was on stage with Coldplay. I was performing with them. And it came down to just determination and embracing who I was. I'm a strong believer that if you embrace who you are and who you want to be, and you're willing to work for it and you're willing to pivot when it's not working, because that saying that Einstein had, the meaning of insanity, I think it was Einstein, meaning of insanity is if you try and do the same thing over and over again and expect a different scenario. Well, no, don't be a hedgehog, be a fox, find new ways. When a fox wants its chicken, it finds a way to get to the chicken. But a hedgehog just keeps badgering the wall. And if you keep doing that, then you're never going to move away and evolve as a human being. So I became that fox that year, and I became embraced my skills and embraced who I was. And for the first time ever, I embraced the weight that was put on my shoulders, and I saw it as a gift, not as a weight, but as a gift. And every day I was unwrapping little bits and pieces of that gift, little bits and pieces to discover, okay. And it was getting me closer and closer and closer to that purpose. I was very lucky that I was given this at a really, really, really young age. Most people have to wait 50 years before they find their purpose. Some never find their purpose. Some are stuck in that everyday job. But I found my purpose. And it's a corny one, but it's my purpose. It's me. It's who I am. And, you know, at the end of the day, corny or not.
I figure
corny or not, with my Australian accent, I can make it sexy.
I don't think it's corny. I don't think it's corny. So go ahead and repeat your purpose again.
My purpose is very simple, and that is to make sure that I can act as a beacon and use my new company with that beacon to accurately portray and represent differently abled on screen and off screen. And in doing so, to allow innovation, both technologically, empathetically, or empathy-wise, and socially. That's my purpose. And I really believe I can unlock that door with what we're trying to create.
Absolutely, you can. Now, why do you call people with disabilities differently abled?
Mainly because not everyone is as good-looking as Benjamin Press and myself. Ben is the head of film and TV for Outlier, in case everyone's wondering why I'm picking on him. I have to. It's part of his job. It's in his contract. Emmanuel gets to pick on you once a day. No, the reason I call it differently abled is for two reasons. And by the way, there's no right or wrong, right? I'm a strong believer that just like LGBTQIA+, you choose how you want to be represented, right? You, and it's none of my business. What you think of me is only my business, what I think of me, right? So, and that's vice versa. My issue isn't with the word, my issue necessarily, or the way it's portrayed. My issue is just with anything with the word dis. The Dalai Lama had a quote a while back, and that was, and Gandhi's also said this, and Mother Teresa, and all these incredible wise human beings have said, words have enormous amounts of power. Yes. And so any word that is surrounded with a negative connotation to it. So, for example, any word that starts with this, naturally, already, subconsciously, somewhere in our minds has a negative element to it, right? It's no other reason. But the same with the words with the F word or with the C word or with these are words, but they still have for history throughout history, they have been balanced, and you need good and you need negative, and that's what creates the balance. And so if you reshift a negative word to something good, you're kind of offing the balance a little bit, right? You're shaking up the balance, and you don't want to balance that. You don't want to lose balance in the word of the universe of words. That sounds weird, but that's how I believe it. And as a writer, that's how I see it. So any word that just starts with this already, you know, has that element. So when you say the word disabled, the first things that come into people's minds subconsciously, naturally, are things like dismiss, disrespect, disregard. And for years, the differently abled or disabled community has been disregarded,
yes,
dismissed, seen but not heard. But that's not, you know, for any other reason, but that's the word. What's that?
In my opinion, they've been pitied. So what makes
it so different
is going to put differently abled people in leading powerful.
So exactly. Now I see the word differently abled as this. It's empowering. Anybody that is, at the end of the day, this community there are people who are genuinely disabled, but the meaning of disabled is you are limited by your ability to live your day-to-day life. Well, guess what? There are tons of people in the world who are limited by their ability to live their day-to-day life. It's not just the disabled community. It's people who are socially, economically in the poverty line. It's people who are homeless. It's people who, whatever it is, it's pregnant women. It's people who might break their legs. So you don't want to just lump everyone into this one community, right? But you can, I suppose. But yeah, I don't think there is a need. But there are a lot of people with disabilities who just look different but can do everything. I, for example, have one arm, three fingers, looks like a hook. You can call me Captain Hook. And one leg, right? And this is a great pickle hand. So, you know, make sure you keep your armpits down, otherwise I'll come and tickle you. But I have a bent leg here, right? But do you know what? I can do everything. I can climb. I can dance. I can jujitsu. I can do whatever I want. I can handstand push-ups. I can drive. Doesn't have to be an altered car. I can do everything. And there are a lot of people in this community that can do that. Now, also, so that's why I feel that this community, I like to call it the different, the able, disabled, outlier community. We are unique. We're outliers. We're special in our own right. Everyone is special in their own right, but we are unique and we are different and we're abled. And when the world becomes accessible, which it will one day, then the word disabled becomes completely redundant in this circumstance because suddenly we're not disabled. The world is disabled. The world that is as built as it is disabled, but the community is not. The community is just different, but we're very, very abled. We're very, very powerful, and we are incredibly innovative, and this community is the future because it's also the only community in which it runs literally. It's a bridge between it runs parallel or horizontally as a bridge between every religion, every creed, every gender, and every race and socioeconomic community, as well as age. It doesn't discriminate. So why discriminate amongst ourselves, I say, which is different, and we're abled, and we're going to conquer in some way, shape, or form, and we'll conquer with empathy, we'll conquer with love, and I really believe we can change the world and make it a better place for one another and for each other.
Beautiful. So do you ever still go back into that victim mode of feeling sorry for yourself?
Absolutely. Whenever I walk into a club and Ben's next to me, you know? No. Honestly, I do. I think it's human to do that. I do. Absolutely, I do. 100% I do. And I have to just check myself.
What do you say? What kind of pep talk do you give yourself to get out of your self-pity? Because I know a lot of people struggle with self-pity.
I asked that question. It's that question. Whose business is it, E? That's it. Whose business is it? And it's mine. And if I choose to allow words of people to hurt me, even though words are powerful, they'll never hurt me. They can't hurt me. They can't change me, and they can't hurt me. So, you know, they may be able to hurt me inside, but at the end of the day, I'm the one that's allowing them to hurt me from the inside. I'm the one that's allowing my shield to come down, and my shield is my confidence. My shield is my love. My shield is my empathy. And as long as that shield is up, then only love, empathy, goodness comes through. But all that negativity, all the words that people use, I mean, you can call me everything from, you know, I'm part African, I just learned. So you can call me, and which I'm very excited to say, 25%. Who knew? I wish I took the height of an African, but no, I got the height of an Arab. But you can call me anything from cripple to terrorist to, you know, little cripple boy, whatever you want to call me. It's never going to hurt me. It won't. At the end of the day, it's never going to hurt me. I won't allow it to hurt me because my shield is up always. And on the odd occasion it is down, I just say those magic words and boom, comes up.
I heard there's three kinds of business: my business, yes, God's business, and none of my business. And what other people think about me is none of my business.
That's
That is even an expansion of your mantra, that there's three kinds of business: my business, God's business, and none of my business. So I love that mantra, and I think it builds your self-confidence, but I think you're inherently, because when I was looking up your bio, your mom fell in love with you when she saw you in the orphanage because she noticed that you have this energy, this charisma, this confidence. And you think you were just born with it, or do you think it was something that you just developed by being in the first 7 years you were around a terrible war every second of your life?
I think we're all born with it, first of all. I think we're all born with confidence. We're all born with happiness and positive light energy, all that sort of stuff. We're also all born with darkness and born with dark energy and you know, all that sort of stuff. I think it's how it's purposed, you know. How is it directed? I'm a strong believer in nurture versus nature. I think we're all born with it. We're all born with the gifts to be able to achieve. Some are born smarter intellectually, but not necessarily socially, because part of their brain works in a certain way or whatever it is. So we're all born with the gifts and all that sort of stuff. My mum, however, she's naturally less intellectual and more socially powerful and educated. You can put her in any scenario and she can find a way to get out of it. And frankly, she could sell sand to the Arabs and ice to the Eskimos. So, and she's had to, you know, in that sense, because she's had to save the lives that she did, and she's had to convince everyone from politicians to mafia to whatever it is to
the Queen of England.
Help her through. To the Queen of England, right. So, you know, she's extraordinary. So I think her nurture over what I already have and her, you know, purposing it towards a certain direction played a huge role. But at the end of the day, even though she purposed it towards a certain direction, I still had to make the choice to go down that path in the end. Once I learned it all, I still had to make that final path to walk through. And I chose to walk through, well, for lack of a better word, hop through or wheel through, whatever it was, or scuttle through. But I went through I think we're all born with it, but my mum kind of guided it. And I went through, you know, you said before, there's three businesses, and in many ways it is, it's God's business, it's my business, and it's none of your business, or none of my business. But it also, I'm a strong believer that whether you believe in God or the universe, I'm a strong believer that God, universe, whatever it is, gives you the power. And at the end of the day, it's also many ways none of God's business, you know, because you make that choice. That's why there is free will. That's why we have free will, because there's nothing God can do to, well, there is something God can do to stop you, but God's not going to stop you, because it's got to be a part of your journey and you have to make that choice. What happens afterwards, probably universal God's business, but while you're on this plane, it's your business and only your business.
Well, I believe that we have choices and that's our free will.
Exactly.
You can make choices like you made when you were in your darkness to self-destruct.
Exactly.
We can make choices
exactly.
To love ourselves and share our light with others. And I feel like we have a choice in every moment to follow love-based
exactly.
thoughts or fear-based thoughts. And
yeah.
If we follow fear, ultimately it'll spiral down to self-destruction.
100%. Yep.
And if we follow love, anything could happen, including being, 100%. You know, sold out stadium like you've been many times. So when you're in a sold out stadium and you're holding space for that many people to feel universal love, to feel that connection with oneness in the universe, what was your most transcendent moment of being in a stadium and performing in front of people? Because I know you've performed in front of a total of a billion people, but what was that moment where you felt like, ah, this is it? I really feel this oneness.
I think it was when I actually did the show with Coldplay in Melbourne. You know, it just felt like everything was meant to be, and it's happened the way it's supposed to happen, and it just felt right. Every inch of it felt right. My mum was surprised. You know, she didn't know that I was there that night. And then you're performing in front of 100,000 people who all they want to receive and all they want to give is love and is joy, and it's excitement and it's passion and it's, you know, it's intensity, it's and it's all their emotions, anger, frustration, it's all coming out because they're able to release it all in that one night, and you're sort of the recipient of it all, which, you know, almost or at least your music is the recipient of it all, and so therefore you're kind of flavoring each note to represent those emotions. It was at the Coldplay concert, I think. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. That is so great. So what do you think that being differently able has taught you that you could not have learned any other way?
I honestly don't know. I mean, this is all I've known all my life. So I wouldn't able to answer that question with complete purity and honesty, because I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think it's necessarily taught me anything specifically. I was raised in a house full of children with different disabilities that were differently abled, and those children had all sorts of conditions, from, you know, from debilitating heart conditions, which meant they were going to die in a couple of weeks, to have been shot in the face by a gun or stepped on a landmine or eaten by a pig or a bear, or, you know, and so they were constant, rare conditions where, you know, your skin grows 7 times faster than others. And you know, so there's so many rare conditions and issues, and or not issues but different abilities and in many ways superpowers, if they were purposed the right way, if our biology was allowed to purpose it the right way, or learned how to purpose it the right way, in many ways it could be a superpower. You know, for all we know, we had a Deadpool in there. Who knows? But these kids did teach me one thing, and that was, no matter what your problem was, Mum actually probably taught us that, no matter what problem you may have, there's always somebody that's most likely worse off.
Yes.
And as long as you remember that, then what you see, what you have, seems to be tiny in the universe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's perspective. It's like, yeah, when I, yeah, you know, I'm in the 12-step community, and sometimes we bring meetings to jails or, you know, mental institutions, rehabs.
Yeah.
You never leave there with the same problems as you had when you went in, because
no, 100% not.
The problems that I think I have are BS compared to somebody who's in jail or someone who's, you know, can't leave. And it's just, I think it's all perspective, right? Like, 100%. Whatever.
And yeah, 100%. And the one thing we as human beings have the ability and power to control is perception. It's probably our greatest gift that we've been given, is that power of perception. And we can shift people's perceptions by a word or a statement or an action or whatnot. My mum, you know, there was this kid who was probably going to die in 3 or 4 weeks if they didn't have their heart operation, their heart surgery. And And I was complaining about something, and Mum comes up to me and she goes, "What are you complaining about?" I said, "You know, Mum, I can't reach this or whatnot." And she goes, "Stop your complaining. You don't need to, you shouldn't be complaining," she says. So, "Yeah, but Mum," she goes, no, yeah, but Mum. I said, "But why?" And she goes, "Emmanuel, see that boy over there, you know, Issa over there? He's going to die if he doesn't have a surgery in 3-4 weeks. Say, "Oh, yeah, good point, Mum. That's good perception. You know, that's changes my perception very, very quickly." And then this boy is would start complaining about something, like, you know, a couple of days later or whatnot. She'd say, "What are you complaining about, Is?" He goes, "I can't do this, or, you know, it's hard for me to walk long distances or play a sport or play this game or whatever." And she goes, "What are you complaining about?" She goes, "You shouldn't be complaining. I don't know why you're complaining." I'm thinking, what the heck is she doing right now? This poor child's going to die in like 2 weeks. And she goes, "I don't know why you complain. You shouldn't be complaining. You're lucky." He says, "Why is that?" And she goes, "Because you've got arms and legs. You can reach high things. Armin and Emmanuel, my brother and me, Armin and Emmanuel, they don't have arms and legs. They can't reach high things. Do you got nothing to complain about?" I said, "Mum, you can't say that to him. That's not fair." She goes, "Well, taught him something though, didn't it?" And it does. You know, it's weird, but it did teach him to stop complaining and just live and enjoy the moments that he had in his life, if they were going to be his, you know, his final days. It didn't, thank goodness. Thank goodness to all the incredible doctors, and thank, you know, the universe and whatnot, to all the incredible doctors, the science around it, and the fact that they were able to do what they were able to do. You know, the boy will live and will live a very, very happy, long life, which is incredible. But it certainly gives perception and perspective. It certainly shifts perceptions and gives us powerful perspective that no matter what in life, we have that power to shift our minds very, very quickly. And if we choose not to, that's just laziness. You know, after knowing, that's just laziness or naivety.
That's so true. I actually have a tattoo on my shoulder that I got when I was 19, and it's the earth. And it's not because I was environmentally conscious or anything like that, or a huge traveler. I wanted to remind myself that I'm not the center of the world, and that no matter what I'm experiencing, there's people that have it way worse than me. And that's
it's so true. Lesson that it's so true. It's so true. And you're not, you know, you've opened your eyes up. And I think there are a lot of, people ask me a big question all the time. Do I blame people for the way they see me or see others? I said, no, of course not. No. It's just naive. You know, people are just, hang on, I got to say this word right because I always say it wrong. I always say naivety, but it's actually naivety. There we go. Thank you.
Naivete. It's a French word.
Naivety. There we go. Naivete. Exactly. I always say naivety, but it's naivety. Naivety. Yeah. So I think it's just people's naiveness, we'll just go with.
Naivety.
Yeah, now you're getting, now it's getting,
I say naivete. The French way is easier.
Yeah, which is naivete, yeah. Which is the right way, but I say naivety. But anyway, it's just people being naive, and those who, and if you can stop being naive, and it's innocence a lot of the time, it's innocent naivety or naivety. It's very innocent a lot of the times, but if we can, once we do learn and once we're able to kind of understand that learning and choose to move forward from that learning, then if you choose to not change, then that's just laziness. So stop being lazy and just make the change. And if you choose not to change, well, you choose not to change, because at the end of the day, it's none of my business anyway what you think of me or anyone else.
That's right. Well, this has been amazing. I remember the first time I heard you, Ben was doing a Zoom with you.
And, yes.
Walking around the room, I normally don't give any attention to what he's doing. He doesn't give any attention to mine. We're like working independently, but in the same condo. And I just heard your voice, and it was more than your Australian accent. It was passion, enthusiasm, energy, excitement. And I just walked over to the computer and I peeked over Ben's shoulder and I'm like, who's that? I had to see who this excitement and all this energy was coming from. And that's the first time we met. And it's just been such a joy to get to know you. And I love what you're building with Outlier and, you know, putting differently able people in the spotlight and in leading roles and changing the perception that people with disabilities are not to be pitied. They're not to be background actors. They're not to be some side plot in the movie, like a brother somewhere, a sister. They're actually, they can lead a movie. That is a huge revolution.
Absolutely. The way I saw it is, and while, just give me a second, I'm just going to put the phone on the charger because I've got 10%, so I don't want to, give me a sec. Here it is, there we go. No, I mean, the way I saw it as well is if I could see myself playing the role, there's no reason why I can't see, you know, somebody else playing it. So, and I could see myself playing a hopeless romantic role. I can see myself playing an action hero. I can see myself playing a superhero. I can see myself playing a bad guy. I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I can't say who, but we were talking about their action franchise, and it's been around a long time. And I'm sure you probably know what I'm talking about because Ben probably shared it with you. But this woman's exceptional at what she's doing, and she's built an incredible empire. But I said to her, why not have a differently abled or a person with disability as the villain of the movie to kind of show that empowerment? Like, hey, why can't I be a villain? Why can't I be the bad guy in this story? Because if I am, then it just shows that I am genuinely like everyone else. There's nothing that separates me from the universe. There's nothing that separates us. There are good and there are bad human beings in general. What those human beings look like should have nothing to do with who they are. So I said, why not have somebody like me as a villain? She goes, you know, it wouldn't be good if the star of the show or the hero of the show is shooting the guy in a wheelchair. First of all, it's no good somebody shooting somebody else in general. Right. But I felt like turning around and saying, well, you know, I can have a very killable face if I need to. But put that aside for a second. The reality is there's no reason why that person couldn't play an amazing, powerful villain or good guy. There's no reason why it should be separated. And that's what we're trying to show with the stuff that we're doing is we can be heroes and we can be villains. Because at the end of the day, in every community, in every creed, in every in every race, in every gender, there are good and there are bad. There is negative and there is good. But at our core, we are all good. Absolutely. No matter who you say, no matter how bad your actions are, at our core, we are all born good. It's how we are purposed. It's how we're directed. But at our core, we are good. It's whether, you know, is there a switch or is there not? There is light and there is darkness in every single person. And if you try and separate that fact, then you are just creating another form of discrimination. And I think we're living in a society right now where everyone's living in their own tribe when really we're just one tribe and we should start thinking like one tribe. From a business perspective, I get it. There are different tribes. You know, I'm not going to look good in white lingerie, but, you know, it's not going to suit me. But it may suit another guy that might look the same as me. Who knows? So as a human species, we are a tribe. We're one tribe, and we need to start operating as that tribe, not constantly as different tribes.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that we're one God, one love, one world, one people, and anything you can do in film or TV to showcase our oneness is just a beautiful thing and a beautiful mission. So thank you so much, Emmanuel Kelly, for being on the Balance Beautiful Oneness Show. How can our listeners find you online? Where do you hang out online?
You can find me on obviously my Instagram, which is that Emmanuel Kelly, at Twitter, which is Emmanuel K Twitter, I think, but with one T. Facebook, obviously Emmanuel Kelly. Snapchat, Emmanuel Kelly. Spotify, YouTube. I have a new song out right now called 1,000 Years, and that is also and that's just Emmanuel Kelly. And Emmanuel is spelled with two M's.
And it's a beautiful song. Definitely check it out. Check it out. Find him on Instagram. I see him on there all the time. Emmanuel, thanks again for your heart and everything that you're giving to the world. I appreciate who you are.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. This has been another
one. So are you, Rebecca.
Oh, thank you. This has
Ben is batting above his average. Benny boy!
He's listening.
Yeah, I know he is. That's why I said it.
Well, this has been another wonderful episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. Please rate, subscribe, and review this podcast. If you or someone you know feels stuck and needs more abundance and balance in their life, please go to my link tree in the show notes to schedule your complimentary breakthrough call. I look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you on the next podcast episode.